that he set this plan out, because he's kind of now, you know, put in a transparent way, this is the option. If you want to get your hostages out, there are good reasons for Israel to take this deal. Israel may not be exhausted, but it's overextended, and there are elements of exhaustion. There are less and less hostages alive. If you want to see them home, living, that's why people, many of the hostages' families are out on the streets screaming. If you don't want these international actions to continue, then there is a path forward here. However, if the Israeli decisions, as it currently seems to be, that this war should continue, military objectives are not going to be realized. They have not been realized. Hamas will not be vanquished in the way that Netanyahu suggests. The Palestinians cannot be defeated militarily. Some of the fancy day after plans are precisely that. They are magical, not realist thinking. But if you want that equation to change, then as the leading Israeli columnist Nahum Barnea has said in a column today, he has said there will have to be internal and external pressure to change that equation. So I fear that initially what we are already seeing is that Netanyahu will try and get away with poo-pooing the American president's plan and trying to have the blame placed on Hamas. Will the US go along with this? That's not a question for Netanyahu. That's a question for the administration. The chance that we actually see an end to these horrors is if it's too costly for Netanyahu to continue. We are not there yet. I'm not suggesting Hamas will be an easy negotiating partner, but their position has been quite clear and consistent, and their initial reaction to the Biden plan has followed suit.
Daniel Levy, I want to thank you for being with us, president of the U.S. Middle East Project, former Israeli peace negotiator under Israeli Prime Ministers Ehud Barak and Yitzhak Rabin. Up next, as protests continue around the world, we'll go to the Brooklyn Museum, where over 1,000 pro-Palestine protesters gathered on Friday. A number were arrested. Back in 20 seconds. Wind from Distant Places by Rim Banna, Jamil El-Sayeh, and Sarah Jane Morris. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Protests over Israel's eight-month war on Gaza continue around the world, across the United States. Here in New York, over 1,000 protesters gathered at the Brooklyn Museum Friday to demand it disclose and divest from any investments linked to Israel's war on Gaza. Some of the activists dropped a banner from the outside of the museum, from the roof, that read, quote, "Free Palestine, divest from genocide." Others went inside the museum to, quote, "deoccupy it" by erecting tents and more banners in the lobby. Democracy Now! Was there.
My name is Mars, and I'm here today as a concerned community member, educator, and artist. So it's very obvious that the museum doesn't want to talk. They want to stay silent during a genocide, and they're trying to silence workers, because the workers actually penned a letter in November 2023 asking the museum to say there's a genocide, asking the museum to divest from genocide, and asking the museum to listen to its workers in the community. And so we're here today again to pressure the museum to say that there's a genocide, to divest from genocide, to help in the occupation, and also to honor the workers and the things that they have already spelt out over the years against Ann Pasternak and the Brooklyn Museum. So today, on Friday, May 31st, a couple hundred artists, cultural workers, educators, and many, many more joined together here in the lobby at the Brooklyn Museum around 4:30 p.m.
Palestine! Free, free, free Palestine!
name's Abdullah Aqar, and I'm part of the group Within Our Lifetime, United for Palestine. We're out here today in front of the Brooklyn Museum to make it clear that the Brooklyn Museum continues to invest and be complicit and play an active role in the genocide that's taking place in Gaza and in Rafah. And we are making it clear that we will continue to occupy institutions just like this one and call out individuals like the board of the Brooklyn Museum to make clear that their money and our money is being used for this genocide. So the Deputy Commissioner of the NYPD, Kaz Daughtry, is actually here on scene, which gives us a very clear message that if he is out here with hundreds of riot gear officers and SRG, which is a counterterrorism unit, used to surveil protests and put out drones and multiple helicopters for a peaceful protest, it means one thing. They are not on the side of justice. They are on the side of genocide.
At least 34 people were arrested during Friday's protest at the Brooklyn Museum. Outside, New York police officers were again filmed using violent tactics to arrest the protesters. A captain of the Strategic Response Group, who was identified as Christopher Carlson, was seen punching at least two women at the protest. Inside the museum, one of the leading activists with the group Within Our Lifetime, Nardine Kaswani, was violently tackled by New York police officers who then arrested her as her hijab came off. We've blurred this part at her request. Nardine Kaswani, one of the founders of the group Wall, that's Within Our Lifetime, again, tackled by New York police officers, her hijab coming off as they arrested her during this major protest at the Brooklyn Museum Friday evening. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. As we now go across the pond to London, where we're joined by Faiza Shaheen, who's been blocked from running for the British Parliament in the general election by the Labour Party, which suspended her over her social media activity dating back to 2014, because she likes several posts, including those of former Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn. And another recent post about The Daily Show. It was a skit that featured The Daily Show's Jon Stewart. This was a skit from 2014 that contributed to her suspension from the Labour Party.
We'll start tonight in the Middle East, where Israel...
What? Israel isn't supposed to defend itself?
Oh, yeah. Mexico bombed Texas. Will we exercise
restraint? What other countries held to the same standard as Israel?
People that want to destroy our terrorism?
What is the matter with you?
It's the only democracy in the Middle East, you
hey! Self-hating Jew?
Dr. Faiza Shaheen was an MP candidate for the Chingford and Woodford Green seat in the northeast London, challenging incumbent Conservative Ian Duncan Smith. She was also the Labour Party parliamentary candidate for Chingford and Woodford Green in 2019 and teaches at the London School of Economics. Over the weekend, dozens of people gathered at the rally in support of her, where she said, quote, "I must be honest. After the way I've been treated, I don't think there's any way back for me into the Labour Party." Shaheen's new op-ed for The Guardian is headlined, "I was mistreated, and that's why hundreds of people will no longer vote Labour, they've told me." Welcome to Democracy Now!, Dr. Faiza Shaheen. Explain what happened. Explain what it was that you were linking to, the views you hold, and why you've been suspended by the Labour Party, your, well, once what was once your party.
Yeah, I mean, like the US, of course, we have a first-past-the-post system. So the Labour Party is meant to be a broad church to include views like mine. So I would be considered to be, you know, the squad side, the left of the party. I have very progressive views, as you can imagine, because of being on the left around wealth inequality, public ownership, Palestine, environmental issues. But I was selected to run in this seat, which is my home seat where I grew up, 2 years ago. And I also ran back in 2019, where we were one of the few seats to have a swing to Labour that awful night. And what happened, there is various processes that they go through in order for you to be picked. So I've already been through a process where they looked at my tweets, etc. Now, what's happened in the last few weeks is there's been another push to get rid of me. This has been ongoing since I've been selected. I've been bullied. I've been, you know, harassed. And this time they found a few tweets, including that sketch of Jon Stewart, that basically they took to show that I was engaging in anti-Semitism. And other tweets they included that went all the way. It was 14 tweets, by the way, from 2014 till now. And some of those tweets were, say, my friend running as a councillor for the Green Party before I'd even joined the Labour Party. Another one of the tweets was me talking about my experiences of Islamophobia within the Labour Party, which they said undermined the ability for the Labour Party to win elections. And so on those grounds, the process was horrible. And what happened was they started briefing the press before they even told me what was going on. But the final email I got from them said, the reason we're dropping you as a candidate is because you undermine our primary purpose to win elections. This comes as a clear contrast to the way I was treated to other people in the Labour Party who have done a lot worse than like a tweet, have said racist things and who have been let off, but who happen to be on the right of the party.
The comedian Jon Stewart responded to the news of your suspension by saying on social media, quote, "This is the dumbest thing the UK has done since electing Boris Johnson. What the actual F," he said.
Yeah, I woke up to see that, and I really appreciate him tweeting that. But, you know, the way it is here about issues of anti-Semitism is that a lot is conflated. So in that piece, for instance, in that tweet, there was something about the Israel lobby, which, of course, is a reality in the US. You know, it's AIPAC, but that is seen to be anti-Semitic or is being pushed as that. And so I have been labelled because of that. I mean, I also don't even remember liking that tweet. So it's just very frustrating for the liking of a few things here and there, which is very sparse, very hodgepodge if you look at this dossier that they brought together about me. And it's just obvious that something else is going on. And it's actually really painful. I feel a bit better the last couple of days because of the incredible support I've got in the community. But, you know, I've worked on this seat for a total of more than 4 years and worked so hard to get it to a point where we were just about to win it. And now they've taken that away. Within 24 hours, they had put in another candidate who doesn't know this area, comes from the other side of London. And the community is very, very angry. And I think it also sends us a message about the type of Labour government we're going to have, because they are going to win. They're going to win big. All the polling shows that. You know, I'm really excited about getting rid of the Conservatives. We've had a terrible time here since they were elected in 2010. But what it shows us is that whereas before the Labour Party did have a broad church of voices, they have been systematically blocking and taking out anyone that they consider to be on the left. And a reminder that I'm not some radical, I'm not that interesting. I mean, I'm an academic at London School of Economics. You know, I've worked with governments around the world on their economic policy. I've worked at NYU. And so it's quite shocking to people that I've been treated this way, especially as a new mom, especially as I've been working so hard and visibly working so hard to win for Labour.
Faiza Shaheen, I wanted to also ask you about Diane Abbott, the first black woman elected to Parliament in 1987 as an MP for Hackney North and Stoke Newington, has served in the Parliament for more than 30 years, historic figure. She was suspended from the Labour Party last year after writing a letter to The Observer saying Jewish and Irish people did not experience racism in the same way black community members do. She apologized for the remarks. And then she had to take a course in fighting anti-Semitism, something like that, before she was she readmitted to the Labour Party and now once again running for the Parliament?
Yeah, so this has been a terrible, terrible, like just appalling behavior. She is a political icon, first black woman. She gets so much abuse. She wrote that letter. She, you know, apologized that was the wording was all wrong, and she then went on to do various different processes that meant that she should have been restored with the whip. They've been saying, oh, well, the investigation's ongoing. Apparently it finished ages ago. They've really messed this woman around. I mean, every, you know, she's considered like an auntie to all of us. I mean, she's just a big icon. And so the people really got behind her and tried to push the Labour to change its mind. Finally, it has, but only because of the people coming together and protesting. But this, again, is another example of where the left is being purged from the Labour Party, but also where double standards exist within the Labour Party. Because if you look at what other white male MPs have done, for instance, they have been let off, whereas she was really, really humiliated in many ways. And it's really just not on. And it's, I think it, a lot of people here, and this is, I talk about this in an article, the hundreds and hundreds of emails that I've got, but just saying, like, we're worried about this because what does it say about how Labour will be in government if it treats women of colour this way and women on the left and it's and men as well, actually. So I think there's a broader point here that needs to make it. It's not just about me or my community and how angry we are here. It's about the kind of government we're going to have for the next 4 to 5 years.
Dr. Shaheen, we just have 20 seconds, but so that you're not mischaracterizing what you're calling for, hundreds of thousands of people in Britain have protested Israel's war on Gaza. What are you calling for right now?
Yeah, I mean, a permanent ceasefire. You know, we need to have a longer-term solution. I've been to so many protests over my lifetime. And yeah, I mean, absolutely, we need some kind of two-state solution, although I recognize there's issues with settlements in the West Bank, but we need to find a way for these countries to coexist, and we need to stop the killing. I mean, it's not a radical position. It's not a radical position that we say that we need to stop killing innocent civilians.
Faiza Shaheen, I thank you so much for being with us. Block from running for parliament in Britain's general election after the Labour Party suspended her over her social media activity, including her liking of a Jon Stewart skit on The Daily Show. We're going to link to your piece in The Guardian, headlined, "I Was Mistreated. That's Why Hundreds of People Will No Longer Vote Labour, They've Told Me." Next up to South Africa, the historic election. The African National Congress no longer holds the majority. Stay with us. The Village People's Go West, covered by Pet Shop Boys, this weekend marked the beginning of Pride Month. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. We end today's show in South Africa, where the African National Congress has lost its majority for the first time in 30 years. The ANC, once led by Nelson Mandela, had held outright power since the end of apartheid. In last week's election, the ANC won just 40% of the vote, obtaining 159 seats in the 400-seat parliament. This is ANC Secretary General Fikile Mabululu.
While the ANC has won the most votes in this election, the results show a significant decline in the ANC support from previous elections. While there are several factors that have contributed to the decline in support, the results send a clear message to the ANC. We wish to assure the people of South Africa that we have heard them. We have heard their concerns, their frustrations, and their dissatisfaction.
And this is South African President Cyril Ramaphosa.
The final announcement of the 2024 national and provincial election results today in many ways represents a victory for our democracy as South Africans. It also represents a victory of our constitutional order, but more importantly, it represents a victory for all the people of South Africa. We have held a successful election that has been free, fair, credible, and peaceful.
For more, we're joined by two guests in South Africa. In Johannesburg, Trevor Ngwane is with us, Soweto-based activist, chair of the United Front, an umbrella body of community and labor organizations. And in Cape Town, we're joined by Louis Friedberg, born and raised in South Africa, veteran journalist who reported on the 1994 elections 30 years ago when Nelson Mandela was elected president. He also covered the anti-apartheid movement and transition to democracy, where he's reporting for The Nation. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Trevor Ngwane, let's begin with you. Can you talk about why you think the ANC lost its majority? Certainly has well more a plurality of the votes, but the significance of losing the majority for the first time in 30 years.
Yeah, thank you, Michelle. Basically, the ANC failed to fulfill the promises of national liberation. It fell too short of the expectations of the masses, of the working class and the poor. Remember, there were great sacrifices made during the struggle against apartheid, but now the victory of apartheid has not yielded the expected results. Indeed, I would say that there is a crisis of everyday life for ordinary people, especially the poor, the working class. A comfortable life is not ordinary in South Africa. Life is difficult. It's even dangerous. Transport, there's not adequate transport, housing, a lot of homelessness, shacks, shanty towns. The unemployment is above around about 50%. Skyrocketing food prices, cost of living, crime. You know, we've got a problem of gender-based violence, women getting raped, child molestation, domestic violence. So all the poverty, the unemployment, the inequality is basically leading to a breakdown of the social fabric. And lastly, Michelle, there's been a generalized energy crisis where we have rolling power failures almost on a daily basis. And this affects all classes, including big business. So everyone is really fed up with the ANC. Everyone feels that the ANC has failed, especially because its top leadership has been mired in corruption, what is called state capture year, where government contracts are given to comrades, to friends, and people are engaged in self-enrichment. The ANC has failed. It deserves what it got.
I want to bring Louis Friedberg into this conversation. You covered Nelson Mandela being elected president 30 years ago, head of the ANC. Can you talk about the trajectory of the ANC and elaborate on what Trevor has just said?
Well, everything Trevor Ngwane said was correct. I was watched Nelson Mandela vote from a few feet away in April 1994. The ANC was promising a better life for all. That was their slogan, a better life for all. We all had great hopes for the ANC, and they failed on so many fronts. And I think one of the things that's most upsetting to me when I've gone around the country, talking to young people, half the country, half of the population is under 30. And this is the key. This is South Africa's future. And talking to young people who are out of work, struggling just to survive, even ones who are in universities, figuring out how to pay their fees, how to pay their rent, they've lost faith in government. And they actually don't believe that anything will get better. And I think that's a huge challenge for the ANC and whatever coalition is cobbled together. The election last week was just really the first phase, because now the ANC has to form a coalition that's never done that before. They've been able to rule without having to consult with anybody else. And the big question now is, who's going to be in that coalition? Because one of the main reasons the ANC lost so much support was because of defections from the ANC itself. The former corrupt president, Jacob Zuma, formed his own party. The party is just a shell on paper. He has the majority in at least the most votes in the KwaZulu-Natal, the second most populous state, province. And how is that going to work? Is he going to be brought back into government? What about the Economic Freedom Front that is also split off from the ANC? The leader there, Julius Malema, was kicked out of the ANC 10 years ago. So the two of those parties together would give the ANC more than 50%. Or are they going to go to the Democratic Alliance, which is a more centrist, some people call it right of center, I call it more liberal, free market party, but it's the leadership is dominated by whites, has really not reached into the black community in South Africa very much. Will the ANC form an alliance with the Democratic Alliance, which has been the official opposition, which many people are hoping for? And then there's another big question, is whether the current president, Cyril Ramaphosa, will be able to retain his seat after this historic, his position after this historic, really, setback. I mean, it's a humiliating result for the ANC. All of this is going to have to play out in the next 2 weeks. And South Africa is really at a fork in the road. Is it going to go towards a more stable government, or is it going to bring back into the party some of the corrupt elements that they tried to get rid of?
Trevor Ngwane, let's end with you. As I watched Cyril Ramaphosa speaking live yesterday, he was actually joking around, cracking jokes, though he went on to say this is a sign of a democracy and we will move forward. Who are the leaders you are looking to right now in forming that coalition government with the ANC?
Well, basically what Louis was saying, you know, our left here was decimated, and certainly forming an alliance with the right-leaning Democratic Alliance is not on. So I think that it is time now for the trade union movement, for the social movements in South Africa to get their act together, to form probably a workers' party, and to make sure that the next coming election, which is in 2 years, local government elections are important here, at least we have something cobbled together which can actually claim some of the political space. I'm telling you, even the number of people who voted, Amy, it went down. People didn't feel like there was any party worthy of their vote, of their trust. The ANC undermined all trust in politics, in politicians. Indeed, when Louis talks about
Trevor, we're going to have to leave it there, but we're going to continue the conversation and post it online at democracynow.org. Trevor Ngwane, Soweto-based activist, head of United Front, and longtime journalist Louis Friedberg. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of Canada Land, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.
You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.